You guys can grab a seat if you would like to. Good morning again. I'm going to say welcome one more time to Level 13 Church. My name's Heath. I'm the pastor here. I want to say a special welcome to those of you who are joining us online this morning. We're excited that you're with us for week number two of our series called Fences. Now, last week we launched into this idea, this concept of fences, and we said that they typically are structures that are created to keep us separated. They serve as boundaries. They serve as parameters. We said it like this last week. They're designed to keep us on one side and from another. That fences are designed to keep us on one side and from another. And the world that we live in, there is this tension. There is this feeling that we need to choose a side. That we have to line up on one side of the fence or the other. But what we learned about Jesus last week is that he doesn't choose one side of the fence or the other. Instead, he chooses to be a gate connecting the two. He doesn't choose, I'm going to put my flag on this side of the fence, or I'm going to put my flag on this side of the fence. He chose instead to be a gate connecting the two. Now, when we were talking about Jesus' life last week, we said that it's a little messy. It's a little bit full of tension. In fact, if we were to pick Jesus up from the day and time that he walked, and we were to place him in the 21st century, we would still say, man, the life of Jesus, it's messy, it's inconsistent, it's unfair, it seems at times, it's a little bit confusing, and man, the tension is real in his life. Those are things that we would say about him in the world that we live in today. And we said this about Jesus last week, that his life was characterized by tension because of a love that he has for people and for God. His life was characterized by a tension between the two sides of the fence because of his commitment to love. And the way that he loved people really, really turned culture on its head. The way that he loved people kept the keepers of culture uncomfortable. And he probably no greater thing that he did that caused them to be uncomfortable than how he reached out to the marginalized, how he reached out to the outcasts, how he reached out to those who the world would call the forgottens, the ones that nobody wanted, the ones that everyone turned their back on. So this morning, we're going to take a look at three different encounters that Jesus had with three different people that represent three different groups of outcasts, of marginalized people. And as we take a look at their lives, we're going to determine how Jesus handled that situation, how he reached out to them, but we're going to discover that he didn't do that for his benefit. He wanted them to know that he saw them, that he loved them, that they mattered, that they were important. But even beyond that, he wanted us to learn a message from his example as well. And we're going to dive into that a little bit later this morning. If you have a Bible or if you have notes that you want to take, we're going to look at a ton of scripture this morning. I'm not going to read all of it. I'm not going to even put all of it on the screen. So I want to encourage you, once you get home this afternoon, to go back and read these passages of scripture to get some context. And I'm going to do my best to walk through all of those areas, but I would encourage you to take some notes and read these when you get back home this afternoon. So this morning, we're going to go to three different letters written by three different men who were followers of Jesus. Two of them were firsthand witnesses to the life and teachings of Jesus. And a third wasn't a firsthand witness, but he investigated thoroughly. He interviewed all those firsthand witnesses. And he wrote a detailed letter, a detailed report, if you will, about everything that went on in Jesus' life. So this morning, we're going to start in the book of Matthew, chapter 8. Then we're going to go to John, chapter 4. Then we're going to go back to Matthew and be in chapter 25. And then we're going to end up in Luke, chapter 4. So Matthew 8, John 4, Matthew 25. Luke 4. I want to encourage you to read that when you get home. This morning we're going to start Matthew chapter 8, and we're going to start by looking at one of the most marginalized, probably the top tier forgotten people in Jesus' day. What we have to recognize is this: Jesus pushed the boundaries and he made the keepers of the culture uncomfortable by interacting with marginalized people in his day. And so let's look at that in Matthew chapter 8. In verse number 1, we read that Jesus is surrounded by a crowd of people. We learn that Jesus is teaching, and there's tons of people there, and we're going to look specifically at how Jesus interacted with a guy with leprosy. Now, leprosy was a severe disease. Covered your body in sores, your extremities, lost feeling. It was nothing for you to cut your finger off and not feel it. In addition to that, the extremities would begin to just die on your body, so that fingers and toes and ears and nose could all fall off. It's a deadly, deadly disease. And as deadly as it was physically, it was equally as deadly relationally. Because the moment that someone was diagnosed with leprosy, the moment that a priest said, "Yes, you have leprosy, worst case scenario, you have leprosy," from that moment forward, they were forced out of the city. From that moment forward, they didn't have any interaction with anyone, loved ones, family, friends. No one was able to reach out and touch them. They were total outcasts. They were forgotten. Society had built this barrier, this fence between the healthy and the sick. And all the rules said, if you're sick, if you have leprosy, you've got to stay over here. And anytime you get close to someone who's healthy, you have to yell out, "Unclean, unclean, unclean." It was a constant reminder that they didn't meet what society expected, that they didn't meet the standards of being a part of the community. So we read that Jesus has all this group of people around him. And in verse 2, we see a man with leprosy show up on the scene. We don't know a lot about his story. We don't know how long he's been sick. If it was a day or if it was 10 years or somewhere in between, we don't know. But what we do know is apparently he thought to himself, "What do I have to lose? I mean, I'm not supposed to get close to people, but if they kill me, at least I'm not going to be hurting anymore." And so he comes and he makes his way to Jesus and he falls on his knees and he says, "Lord, if you're willing, you can heal me. Lord, if you're willing, you can take this death sentence away from me. You can take this sickness that has not only ravaged my body, but it has destroyed every relationship that I have." And the crowd looks at Jesus and like, "Okay, how are you going to handle this? What are you going to do? There's a fence here. You're not supposed to get close to him. He's not supposed to get close to you. There's this division between us. What are you going to do, Jesus?" And Jesus answers. In verse 3, we read, Jesus reached out and touched him. Jesus reached out and touched him, and he said, "I'm willing." And instantly, the leprosy disappeared. Jesus could have spoken a word and healed his body. But he wasn't only interested in healing his body. He wanted him to know, "I see you. You matter. You're important to me, and I'm going to let you know that because I'm going to reach out and touch you. I'm going to break every social expectation, every cultural norm, every safety practice that's in place, and I'm going to reach out and I'm going to put my hand on you because you matter to me." You could hear a collective gasp in the room or in the area where Jesus was at. Just, "Can you see what Jesus did? Can you believe that he did that?" Jesus constantly pushed against the cultural norms and reached out to those no one else was willing to reach out to because he cared about the people, his commitment to love. We see the story continue in verse 5, with a different player Jesus, he's traveling to Capernaum. And as he's traveling, the next marginalized person of the day, the next outcast of the day shows up on the scene. And when we look at this guy from the outside looking in, he doesn't seem like he would be a marginalized person. He doesn't seem like, honestly, he seems like he would be a guy that would be the upper echelon, kind of the cream of the crop, the top dog, if you will. Jesus has an interaction with a Roman guard. Rome controlled everything in Israel. They were the boss. They told all the Jews what they could do. This is all you can do, and if you try to do anything else, then we're going to take you out. They were the political and governmental power of their day. And every Jew worth his or her salt hated the Romans. They hated them. They wanted them to be gone. There were people who were rising up every single day who were these revolutionaries, and they were trying to overthrow the Roman government and usher in an Israeli government, a kingdom where they could do the things that God had called them to do. And so when this Roman guard shows up on the scene and he kneels before Jesus and he says, "Jesus, I have a servant at home who's sick. He's in pain. He's in bed. He can't get up. He's going to die." The expectation of everyone around him for Jesus was that Jesus would look at this guy and say, "Not my problem. It's not my problem. We're not on the same team. Like, you didn't vote the way I wanted you to vote. You know, you don't line up politically the way that I want to line up politically. You know, we're on completely different paths. We're on completely different terms. And if Jesus had responded in that way, no one would have thought anything about it. Everyone probably would have said, "You tell him, Jesus. You get rid of that guy. Maybe his servant will die a quick death and won't be in too much pain. You know, maybe you could say that. You know, hope he dies soon." But Jesus didn't do that. Verse 7, Jesus responds to this request. He says, "I will come and heal him." Jesus says, I'm not only going to heal him, but I'm going to come to your house and heal him. Jews don't go to Roman soldiers' homes. Jews and Romans are not in the same building together. They don't go to the same places together. They are completely different sides of the fence. "Jesus, you can't be serious. You're going to go to this guy's house?" "Yeah, I'm going to go to his house." Because Jesus was not content to allow the political and governmental divide to remain. See, Jesus served and loved people on both sides of the fence. He loved and served the Jews, but he also loved and served the Romans. Again, he wanted to be a gate connecting the two sides. And so he says, "Hey, I'll come to your house and heal him." And the Roman soldier said, "I'm not worthy for you to come to my house." He said, "But I understand authority. I'm a man of authority. I have servants, and if I tell them to do this, they do it. And I have troops that are under my care, and if I tell them to go, they go." And Jesus kind of just cracks a smile, and he steps back. He says, "Man, this guy gets it. I haven't seen faith like this in all of Israel." And he goes on and he says, "Let me just tell you that there will be Gentiles. There'll be people who are outside of the family of Israel that are going to come and have a seat at the table. They're going to come and be a part of God's kingdom." He said, "This guy gets it." And then he turns to him and he says, "Go on your way. Because you believed, it's happened. Go on your way. Because you had faith, your servant's healed." And Matthew tells us that from that very moment, that servant began to get better. He was healed immediately. Jesus wasn't concerned about keeping a political divide, a governmental divide. He wasn't concerned about keeping the parameters that the fence that society had placed on him intact. He was more concerned about the person. Which leads us to our third and the most marginalized people group ever. In the day that Jesus lived, this particular group of people were considered outcasts of the extreme measure. This interaction Jesus had was with a woman. Now, in the day and time which Jesus lived, women were considered less than human, is putting it mildly. They were considered property. They had no rights. They had no authority. And no man would consider having a conversation with a woman who wasn't his wife. I mean, why would you do that? They didn't deserve that conversation. But we read in John chapter 4 that Jesus is heading to Samaria, and he shows up at the town of Sychar. And it's hot, and he's tired. It's been a long day already. And Jesus goes, and he finds himself a seat by a well. And he sends all 12 of the disciples to go and find him something for lunch. I don't know why 12 people had to go and find lunch for one guy. I mean, they had a buddy system. I don't know. I don't know what that was about. But they all went away. I think Jesus had a plan, because Jesus always has a plan. But they were all gone, and he's sitting there by this well, and noon, hot. Nobody comes to the well at noon. And all of a sudden, here comes a woman making her way to the well. And the fact that she's coming to the well at noon lets us know where she stands in her own city. Not only is she marginalized because she's a woman, but her own people don't accept her. Because everybody else comes and gets water in the morning, and everybody else comes back and gets water in the afternoon. But she's coming the hottest part of the day. She comes up to the well, and Jesus is sitting there, and he looks at her, and he says, "I'm really thirsty. Can you please give me a drink of water? Please give me a drink of water." Sounds like a simple request. This woman, she's taken back. We look in verse 9, and she says, the woman was surprised because Jews refused to have anything to do with Samaritans. All right, so it's a woman. But it's not just any woman, it's a Samaritan woman. Jews and Samaritans hate each other. The Jews look at the Samaritans as barbarians, uneducated, uncivilized, lowlifes. Jews refuse to have anything to do with Samaritans, she said to Jesus. "You are a Jew, and I'm a Samaritan woman. Why are you asking me for a drink? Like, don't you know the boundaries? I mean, Jesus, don't you know that you're not supposed to have this conversation with me? You're a Jew and I'm a Samaritan woman. That's two strikes against me already, and your reputation's going to take a hit because you're having a conversation with me." And Jesus says, "If you only recognized who it is that's having this conversation with you, if you only knew who it was that asked you for a drink of water, you would ask him to give you living water." And this woman, she looks around kind of confused, and she said, "Look, this well is deep, and you don't have a rope or a bucket to draw water out. Are you greater than our ancestor who gave us this well?" And Jesus, right to her question, he says, "Look, whoever comes and draws water out of this well, they're going to get thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water that I give them will never thirst again. Because that water will just spring up inside of them like living water, springs of water bubbling over inside." And she gets excited. She says, "Sir, please give me this water that you're talking about. Give me the water that you're talking about. Give me what it is that you're telling me about, so I don't have to come to this well again and draw water all over again every day and face the humiliation and the heat of coming out at noon when nobody else is here." And Jesus turns the conversation and he makes it a little bit awkward. He says, go get your husband. And in that statement, her face drops. Her eyes drop to the ground. Every feeling that she had felt for her entire life came flooding back in. It was reinforcing that you're not good enough. You don't measure up. Why? She answered, I don't have a husband. And Jesus said, you're right. You answered honestly because you've had five husbands. And the guy you're living with now is not your husband. And as awkward as that was, as difficult as that was, the woman's reaction was incredible. Many of us, if someone had said something like that to us, we probably would have picked up the bucket and thrown it at Jesus' head. But she didn't. Jesus went into the most painful, the most humiliating part of her life. And her response, you must be a prophet. I mean, you must be a prophet. And so she began to ask questions, religious questions, spiritual questions. She said, okay, look, you Jews say that the place to worship God is on this particular mountain. And we Samaritans, we worship on this mountain. So who's right? And Jesus just continues. He says, you Samaritans don't really understand the God that you worship. We Jews get it because salvation has come through us. But there's coming a day. There's coming a day when you're not going to worship on either mountain, but true worshipers are going to worship the God, the Father, in spirit and in truth. And she says, well, I know when the Messiah comes, then he's going to tell us everything. He's going to make it plain. He's going to make it easy for us to understand when the Messiah shows up. And then Jesus did something that he had never done before. He looked this woman square in the eyes and he said, I am the Messiah. He had never revealed that to anyone else at this point. He said, I am the Messiah. I am the one that you're talking about. Jesus decided he was going to have a conversation with a woman, but not just any woman, a Samaritan woman. And not just any Samaritan woman, a Samaritan woman with a past. And he chose this Samaritan woman with a past to reveal who he was. Jesus was determined to draw near to the marginalized rather than keep a barrier between them. He was willing to draw close to the ones nobody else wanted to draw close to. But Jesus, your reputation is going to take a hit if you do that. Jesus wasn't worried about guilt by association. He valued the person more than he valued the keepers of the culture and what they thought about him. He wasn't worried about guilt by association. He was more concerned about the person. We could say it this way. Jesus' purpose in going to the marginalized people of his day was to connect those who felt forgotten to a God who had never forgotten about them. His purpose all along was to connect people who felt forgotten to a God who had never forgotten about them. And he told us so in Luke's writing, chapter 4, verses 18 and 19, where he quotes from the prophet Isaiah. He says, the Spirit of the Lord is on me, for he's anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim captives will be released, that the blind will see, that the oppressed will be set free, and that the time of the Lord's favor has come. This is who I am. This is why I'm here, is to reach out to the ones that nobody else wants to reach out to. It's to connect with the ones that everyone else has turned their backs on. Jesus' purpose in reaching out to those who were marginalized was to connect those who felt forgotten to a God who had never forgotten them. And that's incredibly good news for us. But what is it that Jesus wants us to learn? What is it that Jesus wants us to know? We said earlier that there's a message he wants us to gather. What does he want us to know? He wants us to know that we cannot follow the expectations of our culture. We have to follow his expectations instead. So what are his expectations? We just have to figure those out, right? Not exactly. He told us. In Matthew chapter 25, Jesus is teaching on the kingdom of heaven. He teaches on all of these different examples of what the kingdom of heaven is going to look like. And in verse 31, he begins teaching about separating sheep and goats. He says, the king's going to separate the sheep from the goats like a shepherd. And to those on the right, the sheep, he's going to make this statement. And I want to read it to you. This is in verse 34 of chapter 25 of Matthew. He says, the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father. Inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the creation of the world. For I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty. You gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me. And a few verses down, he talks to the goats on his left. And he says, away with you, you cursed ones, into eternal fire prepared for the devil and his demons. For I was hungry, and you didn't give me anything to eat. I was thirsty, and you didn't offer me a drink. I was a stranger, and you didn't invite me to your home. I was sick. You didn't take care of me. I was naked and you didn't give me clothing. I was in prison. You never came to me. And Jesus says both the goats and the sheep and the goats will question, Lord, when did we see you that way? Lord, when did we experience you naked and hungry and hurting and in prison? When did we see you and take care of you? And the goats are going to be like, yeah, Jesus. When did we see you and not take care of you? If we had known that you were there, if we would have known that it was you, we would have taken care of you, Jesus. We would have made sure you had everything you needed because you're kind of a big deal. And his response to both is in Matthew 25, verse 40. He says, I tell you the truth. When you did it to one of the least of these, when you did it to one of the marginalized, when you did it to one of the ones that everybody else turned their back on, when you did it to one of those that everyone else has forgotten, you did it to me. And when you refused to do it to one of those, you refused to do it to me as well. Jesus' calling, Jesus' life was driven by love. And it was that love that caused him to push the envelope of the social expectations and constraints and reach out to those that nobody else wanted to reach. And his command for us is to go and do the same. So what does that mean? Does that mean that we all need to become social and political activists and plant our flag on the side of the fence and saying we're sticking up for the marginalized and nobody else, and we're firmly planting our flag on this side of the fence? And the answer is yes and no. Yes, we stand up and we fight for those who can't fight for themselves. Yes, we reach out to those who are hurting and bruised and broken. Yes, we reach out to those who have been forgotten, that the world has turned their back on. Yes, we do those things. But Jesus doesn't want us to plant our flag on either side of the fence. Because as we're going to discover next week, Jesus didn't simply reach out to the marginalized people of his day. He didn't only reach out to those who had been forgotten. Jesus also reached out to those who did the forgetting. And he calls us to do exactly the same. This morning, the band's going to come back out and lead us in one final song. But in a group like this, in a room this size, chances are there's someone here who fits the category, who this really resonates with, who has felt forgotten. And I want to say this from the bottom of my heart. You are not forgotten. There is a God in heaven who loves you, who knows your name, who has never lost sight of where you are. There is a God in heaven who calls you today and calls out to you today and says, I see you. You matter. I created you, and you're mine. For anyone in the room that's been hurt by the church, people who claim to love Jesus, but has felt as if your back, that their backs were turned on you, I want to say this. I'm sorry. I am sorry, because that's not what a Jesus follower does. If we're going to do what Jesus called us to do, we're not going to turn our backs on anyone. We're not going to pretend people are invisible or forgettable. If that's happened to you, I am so sorry. And I beg you, don't let what someone in the name of religion did to you to turn you away from a God who has never forgotten you. Don't let someone, what someone did in the name of religion, turn you off to Jesus, who says, I see you and I love you. As the band plays this morning, if that's you, if you fit into that category, there's nothing special about coming to the front and me praying for you. There's nothing super special that takes place there, but I think it's be an awesome step. And I want to invite you to come. I would love to pray with you. You pray where you're at, that's fine too. But know this, God loves you. He sees you. He knows your name, and you matter. Father, thank you for your word and for your truth. God, would you speak to our hearts this morning in a powerful way. Let freedom take place in Jesus' name.